Welcome to Winning Hand, the podcast about Marvel Champions, one card at a time. I am your host, Boom Guy, and I'm here today with a special guest, Villain Theory.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for coming on. It's good to have you here. I really look forward to the discussion that we have today about one of the new cards. Obviously, everyone already knows who clicked on it because it's in the title of the episode. It's Phantom X and EVA. So we'll get into that. Whether you're a new or an old listener, if you like what you hear and want to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to leave a rating and a written review on whatever platform you're listening. That really helps bump us up and get the show into more people's podcatchers. So thank you. All right. So since we have a guest, we always like to start with a few questions and let the guests introduce themselves and get to know them a little bit. So I have a few quick questions to run through for you, and then we'll get into some longer questions. So first question is, what is your favorite hero in Marvel Champions to play?
That is an excellent question, and I could give a lot of different answers because the heroes in this game are, you know, I think really, really good, but I'm going to have to go with Star-Lord. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, take a few risks, and I think I like the way he interacts with different cards, especially allies, so big fan of Star-Lord.
That's a good choice. And what is your favorite aspect to play of the four? Or I guess of the five now announced, but four so far.
Ooh, can I choose the pool aspect? You know, it looks interesting.
It does look interesting.
Yeah, I would say I'm very much torn between aggression and leadership. But I think I just have to give the slight edge to leadership. Obviously, it matches up quite well with Star-Lord. I just like how, again, I like the interaction between the cards. You know, almost every event and every upgrade kind of interacts with your allies. So you've got a lot of moving parts that, you know, connect.
What do you think separates leadership from the other aspects? Like, what makes it the most fun for you?
I can have the same ally in my deck, but depending on, you know, maybe I've got some upgrades for it, maybe I've got an event that boosts it. You know, I can use it in very different ways, and I think I really do like allies. I think a lot of people do not like allies, but I think what's cool about them is, you know, I can attack, I can fort, I can block. You know, they have a lot of things going on, and then they might have some kind of ability on top of that, so I think that just really elevates it for me.
And when you're playing leadership with the allies, do you tend to favor decks where allies survive or where you're chump blocking and using them for effects when they come into play?
I like to mix it up, but, you know, I do think I like it when the allies do something really interesting. You know, if they have some kind of, you know, enters play effect or some kind of bonus when you use them. So I definitely want to use them rather than block with them. But, you know, sometimes their time has come and it's time for them to take an attack.
Next question, what is the primary player count that you play the game at?
Again, that's kind of a 50-50 between solo and two player, but I will say a lot of the time that I'm playing solo, it's kind of for the purposes of testing decks. I think I'm quite known for, you know, deck building. I do enjoy it, but when I'm just playing for fun, you know, I really like to have, you know, two heroes, whether that's two-handed or most of the time, I'm lucky enough that my partner actually plays the game, so we play two player quite a lot.
Yeah, I think two player is my favorite player count. I think it's actually the best for the game. I like three player as well. Four player tends to not be my favorite. It gets a little bit long, and I think the time between turns tends to drag sometimes. A game can go on. Plus, the villains often have so many hit points that it just can become a grind at some point.
Yeah, I would say all player counts definitely have, you know, their pros and cons, but two player does feel like quite a sweet spot to me as well.
You mentioned you are known for your decks, and I think that's true. That's where most people know you from. But since you're known for your decks, would you mind telling us what are some decks or the deck that you are most proud of?
That is a very difficult question because they are all my children, but I think one of the most interesting ones I have made is perhaps my Master of Puppets deck, which is a Phoenix protection deck. And traditionally, I don't like protection that much. I don't, you know, I feel selfish, but I don't really like to, you know, dedicate my turns to defending people too much. but what I like about this deck, the Master of Puppets deck, is that it's all about the psionic protection card that came in Phoenix's pack. I believe it's called Psychic Misdirection. And it's all about, you know, turning the villain's attack, you know, I think any enemy, but normally the villain's attack into another enemy, you know, make them take out their own minions, which is, you know, infinitely satisfying.
I did a variation on that deck with my favorite hero, Vision, where it was all about controlling. It was a minion build, but in a different way. So it was using cards like Pinned Down and Karma and Iceman and anything that interacts with the minions. So the traditional minions build is one that we associate, I think, with Thor or Rocket and aggression. But this was about trying to find minions and either negate them with Pin Down or stun them with Iceman, take control of them, you know, whatever you could do, use Iron Fist, different ways to kind of control minions that way, which I quite enjoyed. It sounds kind of similar to what you're talking about with, it wasn't as good as your deck, I assure you.
I'm sure it was. You know, at the time I made Master of Puppets, Phoenix hadn't been out long. You know, if Iceman and Karma had been out then, they would definitely be in there as well. I think that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool way to play. And it's a deck I hadn't seen before when I built it. Like, I'm not an expert deck builder, but it was fun. So recently, you have made the jump from Marvel CDB cult hero to YouTuber. What sparked that move to YouTube? Like, what convinced you to finally start that? And what are your plans for the channel going forward?
So there's definitely a few factors involved in why I made the jump from making decks to YouTube, and I'm still going to be making decks. I don't know if I'll be making them as much because, you know, I've got to split my time to the game somehow. To begin with, when I got involved in Marvel Champions, I watched one YouTuber, and that guy was Tony Tails, and I really liked his style. He's very, you know, analytical, and that suited me very well because at that point in time, I was trying to absorb everything I could about the game. You know, if I get really interested in something, I kind of want to, you know, like a sponge, take in everything I can. And yeah, every time a new video of his came out, I'd be watching, commenting, and actually ended up on his podcast. That was the first kind of actual content I ever did for Marvel Champions. And sadly, Tony, you know, and I think it's the right choice here, you know, personal reasons, but he stepped back from making videos for the community. And, you know, I don't think many people know this about me, but I used to stream, you know, video games a few years ago, which, you know, it wasn't, you know, content quite like this, but, you know, I definitely dabbled in it a little bit before. And when Tony stepped back, I thought to myself, I like doing that kind of, you know, analytical style. Maybe that could be something I do. But then I decided against it. You know, a few months went by. And another YouTuber called Nelson invited me onto his channel, and we actually started doing a little series together. And, you know, I was thinking, this seems kind of fun. And during that time as well, I started a deck building series called Unusual X-Men Decks, which was taking X-Men characters, you know, and trying to build a deck for them without, you know, all the typical pieces you would expect for that character. Some of them do have obvious cards, but then they've got some, you know, crazy gimmick thrown in. Some of them just say, no X-Men cards, no mutant supports, nothing like that. Go completely different. And I basically gave one of each of those decks, there was one for each hero, to a different, you know, content creator to play on their channel. And I just loved seeing the response from people that they gave, you know, after being able to see the deck played. I love that kind of engagement. So that really drove me to want to, you know, get some of, you know, that kind of interaction directly.
Yeah, Tony Tails is a bit of a legend, and I quite enjoyed his content as well. And it was sad when he left. Obviously, he's got his own reasons, and where I respect, you know, this is ultimately just a hobby, and we're talking about a card game, and there are more important things in life. So best of luck to him. I hope he's enjoying some of the content that's out there now. I hope he's still playing the game, and maybe we'll see him around at some point. So going forward for your channel, like, what are your plans? What do you see yourself doing? What would you like to do?
As someone who's known for deck building, and I do thoroughly enjoy it, you know, some days I think I enjoy deck building as much as I enjoy actually playing the game itself, you know, trying to put all these parts together and make something that's really satisfying to me. But while I would like to, I think the focus of my channel will continue to be deck building, in, you know, largely. I do want to branch out a little bit because I think because where I have, you know, the community's mostly only known me from my decks on Marvel CDB, that is kind of what I have been associated with. But to make decks, you have to play the game and interact with all parts of it. So I like to, you know, review heroes, do a bit of different things like that. Nothing too, you know, crazy beyond that. I think I'm quite happy putting the odd video out, and we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of hunger in the community for deck building tips and help. Marvel CDB is hugely popular among the community. And I see posts all the time on Discord or Reddit or wherever about, I just got into the game. Are the precons any good? I don't know how to build decks. You know, or people who are thinking about getting in the game, should I not get into the game because I don't know how much time I have for deck building, or it seems overwhelming? And I sympathize with that because I think if you're getting into the game at this point, there's a lot of cards and there's a lot of content to absorb. And I think it would be overwhelming. I joined the game pretty much at launch, just after. I got in at the first hero pack, so Cap and Miss Marvel, and that's when I bought a core set and got into it. So I was lucky to grow with the game, and I'm really grateful that I was able to grow with those cards and then eventually outgrow some of those cards as better ones came out and we realized that some of those core set cards are not worth playing. But yeah, I think getting in now, people who haven't played a game like this could struggle. So I definitely could see your deck building tips and whatever you do being hugely popular. I think your channel has already grown tremendously since you started. So congrats on that.
Thank you very much. And I would agree with you that I think it could be quite overwhelming. I actually got into the game around Galaxy's Most Wanted, so a little bit later than you. And it's definitely an interesting time to join. But I thought there was a lot of cards then. There is, you know, I would say, I think we're like have double the amount of expansions now. So there's definitely a great deal more content. But to anyone listening, interested in deck building, I would say don't be intimidated. It's easier than it looks, but you know, you're going to have to experiment. Your first deck, if it doesn't come out, you know, exactly how you want, that's fine. You know, you just have to work on it and, you know, kind of an process you have to iterate on and you'll get better over time. But you don't need a perfect deck to, you know, have fun and beat a few villains.
Yeah, and I think what you said, the iterative aspect of deck building is important because often I see people who are new to deck building in a game like this will get a deck or try their first time at building their own deck and it doesn't work or it doesn't perform like they wanted to. And then they say, oh, I'm terrible at this. Take the deck apart, go on Marvel CDB and build somebody else's deck. But even when you're playing someone else's deck off of Marvel CDB, it's really important to understand why that deck was constructed that way, why those pieces are included, and how to pilot the deck comes from that base. And I think if you're doing it yourself, you just innately understand that. Otherwise, you have to read up on it, which you do great write-ups. And there's a number of really good deck builders who do great write-ups on each of their decks they do with pictures and GIFs. And it's a whole, some of them get very elaborate. And it's like, I feel like it's sitting down to read a chapter of a book. But yeah, so we look forward to seeing more what your YouTube channel has. And I personally know I'll be watching and tuning in, and I look forward to what you're going to do. So a couple episodes ago, we started a new segment where we start answering questions people send in, because I've been getting more and more emails and messages on Instagram and Reddit and Discord and via email, winninghandpodcast@gmail.com. So we're answering one question each episode. Today's question is about campaigns, and I think it's appropriate because we just recently had a new campaign come out. So, Villain Theory, when a new campaign comes out, this listener wanted to know, how do you play that campaign content initially? Do you avoid all spoilers, you know, sleeve the cards with a blindfold so you don't read any of them? Do you go in as blind as you can? Don't skip ahead in the comic because you don't want to know the next chapter. Are you avoiding spoilers like that? Do you not care? Are you looking at the spoiled content online that's released before the content even comes out, so you already know what's happening? Do you play with the campaign cards, without the campaign cards? Do you use the precons it came with? You know, there's all kinds of ways to play. So what's your favorite way to play when a new campaign box comes out and you rip that shrink off? How do you play it?
Okay, that's a great question. So what I initially do every time any campaign has come out is we actually just play through the campaign. I personally do prefer playing in standalone mode. I honestly normally only ever play the campaigns once. And if they've been out for, you know, a bit longer, I will, you know, eventually drift back to them. But it's only something I do very, very occasionally. Definitely a standalone player. But whenever I open a new box, big part of the experience, which I do enjoy, is actually playing the campaign. Kind of, you know, this is kind of a one-time thing for me in that regard, you know, mostly. But I do really enjoy it. I take the heroes in the box, and I'm quite fortunate that we normally play two-player, that, you know, one of us gets to play one. One of us gets to play the other. Although I will say there are, I don't want to call them arguments, but definitely quite often we are both drawn to the same character. So there is an element, you know, where I'm playing, no, my second choice out of two characters. I'm looking across, I'm thinking, yeah, that character looks really good. I can't wait to play those after four more scenarios. But no, I do enjoy it. I enjoy all the characters, really. So it's not too bad.
Do you use the campaign cards when you play the campaign?
Yes, yeah.
I think I'm like you. I play the campaign through pretty much once, as it's intended, with the campaign cards, And I would say, I think every time I've used the heroes in the box, and since I'm excited to play them, they're new, I think it's about 50-50 whether I try the precons or just take them apart. I don't often play the precons anymore. I forced myself to play them in the next evolution because I wanted to see how they were performing, because early precons, I think, had a pretty bad reputation in the community of being weak or frustrating in a lot of ways. So I wanted to see how those have improved. But I'm like you, I don't really go back to the campaign. And if I do go back to the campaign, I think I often will play them as like 5 standalone scenarios, and I skip the campaign cards for the most part. I find those are really hit or miss for me. They add to the setup. They add to like the complexity of the things I have to track without really adding a lot of enjoyment for me. One of the things I want to ask you about though with campaigns is, it seems like, you know, I don't know what your experience is with Arkham Horror or the Lord of the Rings LCG, which are other ones by Fantasy Flight. I've played both of them. Arkham Horror is very campaign driven. You basically have to play the campaign. I mean, you can play a standalone, but it's designed to be played as a campaign. It's a story. And I almost feel like Marvel Champions, the designers kind of want that experience. Like, they kind of want these campaigns to provide narrative twists or things that are happening. They feel loosely tied together, and I've always felt that that structure is kind of unsatisfying. How do you feel about the campaigns we have?
Yes, I think I agree with you, and I just want to go back quickly and say, I normally try and use the precons, but I normally edit them a little bit. You know, if they give me free of this card, which, you know, it's kind of clearly only meant to be one copy of, and most, you know, mostly be used that way. So I'll normally, you know, move that out and, you know, maybe add a couple extra in. But in Mutant Genesis, my partner was like, yeah, we should really play the precons. So I was like, oh, okay. And she was playing Protection Colossus, and she despised that precon. She, you know, she hates it to this day. So yeah, we quite heavily edited the next evolution precons.
So how do you feel about the campaigns as they're designed and given to us by Fantasy Flight?
I think you really hit the nail on the head. I've not played much of the Lord of the Rings LCG, but I've played quite a bit of Arkham. And that game for me feels like it was built for campaign mode from the ground up. Whereas Marvel Champions, it kind of feels like it's something else added on. And it's a little bit what you say. I think it adds complexity to scenarios, which I don't think need too much of it. And it does vary from campaign to campaign because they all have very different, you know, things that are added on. I actually really, I found the next evolution campaign really pleasant. I really enjoyed that. I think that's definitely, you know, definitely into my top 2 campaigns. Not sure what the other one is, but it's definitely up there. It felt very smooth. You know, there wasn't too much added to it. I feel like the Sinister Motives, while I really liked all the interesting things going on, there was quite a lot of bookkeeping for Marvel Champions, which I'm not, I don't really mind. But, you know, when I play Marvel Champions, that is not an experience I'm kind of looking for in that game.
It's interesting. I do think this campaign was really good. Maybe the best played as a campaign. But I've seen some complaints online already about the Hope Summers modular. I have my own complaints going back to Mad Titan's Shadow that forces Loki to use the Infinity Stones, which I really just wish I could play Loki without the Infinity Stones, but it's a part of, it interacts with his cards in a way that you can't really take it out. And so for me, that's a holdover of the campaign mode that I really wish wasn't there. And I wish that was just a campaign element. So if you're playing the story, sure, Loki has, you know, the Infinity Stones because that's how the comic went. But for the rest of the time, I just want to play Loki. And it's the same with this Hope Summers modular. It relies very heavily on that, which it's not a bad modular set, but you don't always want to include it. So I have some mixed feelings about the campaign, and I agree with what you said. It feels tacked on. It feels like a core part of the design in Arkham, whereas here it felt like, oh, well, we're releasing these scenarios. Why don't we make it a campaign? And it's like a comic book with a few panels that kind of pulls it together, but they've gotten better narratively over time, but I don't think that's the experience I want necessarily from Marvel Champions. I prefer standalone as well.
Just to add on to that, I think the designers, you know, when they have an idea for a box, what I've heard in, you know, podcasts and interviews with them, I think they kind of have a story idea that they want to tell, and that is kind of how they will structure it. So they will have the campaign idea from the get-go, but me as a player, I like standalone. So I agree, you know, I think the Hope Summers thing is fun, but I don't want it all the time. And it's in, I think, you know, quite a few of the villains in the new box. So yeah, for me, I would, you know, I would prefer if they kind of went for, you know, standalone first, but that is probably only going to make the campaigns feel even more, you know, kind of as an afterthought. That is my opinion. One of my friends plays campaign mode most of the time, so I'm sure there are listeners here who will disagree and think, you know, they love the campaigns. It feels like, you know, the right way to play, and that's fine, but it's definitely not, you know, how I feel.
Yeah, well, listeners, let us know how you feel. Do you like the campaigns as they are? Do you play campaign mode? Are you primarily standalone mode? Let us know what you think. All right, let's move on now to what we've been playing recently.
So this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody, but I've been playing a lot of Next Evolution. And as you just heard, when it first came out, I played for it in campaign mode. We, you know, played one of the new heroes each, and it was really fun. But after that, I took the new heroes and I just, you know, slammed them up against a bunch of the old villains just to get a real sense of how they work against, you know, existing, you know, sort of established power levels. You know, with someone quite analytical, that is quite, you know, fascinating to me. So I really enjoyed that. And then we flipped it over. So we've now been playing old heroes against the new content. So, you know, we've had, I think it was She-Hulk and Phoenix up against, and I guess calling Phoenix an old hero is kind of, you know, it's from the previous wave, but, you know, pre-existing heroes. We took them up against a couple of the villains, and that's been really fun. We had one game which we ended where we were both at one HP, so it doesn't get any closer than that.
Wow. Do you play the campaigns usually? Do you play, generally, do you play standard expert, standard two, expert two, heroic? What's your preferred difficulty level?
Our preferred difficulty is expert mode. But in Mutant Genesis, we, you know, we took the campaign and we played it in expert mode. That was our first experience. This time, we started in standard mode, perhaps slightly humbled by taking, you know, what was mostly just the precons still at that. It was still the precons up against Magneto, which was quite the experience. So we went into standard this time, but I do normally play on expert almost all the time otherwise.
I'm almost always exclusively at expert. I will sometimes increase the difficulty by using the standard 2 with the expert instead of standard 1. And I find between normal expert and standard 2 expert 1 is kind of my preferred range. But I went through Next Evolution in standard first, and I found it kind of, I don't want to say easy, but it wasn't much of a challenge, even with the precons. Going back through it at a higher difficulty, I think, has made it more enjoyable for me. But I also played it two-handed, and then I played it solo a couple times. Well, I've been playing a lot of Cable recently, and I've been playing a bunch of Cable, and I tried some of your Cable decks because I knew you were going to be here, so I played some Cable. I have seen a lot of people talking about the new heroes, and I'm curious to get your take on this. I see a lot of people talking about Domino and how good Domino is. I think Domino is very powerful, but I might think Cable is more powerful. I might think he's the stronger of the two, ultimately. I think he is really incredible. If you can get a good mulligan, he can hit the ground running. A couple of games recently I played where I, you know, was able to put out build support right away, but I drew another player's side scheme in my hand at the start, so I was able to clear sometimes two of them in like the first turn if you get a good draw. And then he just was really going fast. He's great at support, which I hear a lot of people say, but I think he's really good in solo too. I think he's very, very strong. He can kind of ramp up if you don't get a fortuitous draw early. I feel like you can kind of stumble out of the gates a little bit, but by the end of the game, you know, he's got so many upgrades and supports that you're churning through your deck so quickly because there's not much left anymore, and you're just getting all your best cards every turn, and he has so many resources to pay for everything. Gray Malkin is incredible and very clever. It reminds me so much of Friction Resistance, which I think, you know, I'm not the first one to say that, but it's such a fun interaction. I think Cable's really good. So if I had to pick, I would say right now Domino is probably stronger than Cable, but I think by the time the game advances a bit, I think Cable will be the stronger of the two. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the strongest of this wave. Hot take. What do you think?
So I found Cable to be more fun than Domino for me, although I have enjoyed them both, you know, a lot. I think they're both really good heroes. I think if you compare them to other, you know, campaign boxes, I think these are some of the best we've had, you know, together. I think they're both really strong, you know, in terms of fun. But also, yes, they are pretty strong. I found that Domino, I would say, is quite a bit stronger to me overall. And I do think Cable will get better, though. I do think as more side games come out, he's going to grow. One in particular I'm looking forward to was officially previewed with X23. So hopefully we're okay to talk about that here. That is the specialized training one. I think, you know, the way he readies up, you know, from a solo's perspective, he's going to be able to, you know, really lean into that. And that will make, you know, a notable impact. But in multiplayer, helping everyone to get that is going to be very, very strong as well. I do think it's interesting how in multiplayer, he's very much, you know, a lot more of a support hero because of the way you can interact with, get those side schemes out, especially at the start. So I think that's very interesting. Whereas in solo, it's a lot easier to defeat the side schemes you get out. So you can kind of have more of a rapid fire, play this, defeat it. You know, as you say, you can get another one out on the same turn. Not all the time, but I'd say fairly often. And that's really satisfying. It's quite rare, but I know I've had combos where I've actually managed to, I think, defeat three. I can't remember exactly how that sequencing goes, but it's been very good when it lines up. Suddenly a big swing in momentum. So he can have some really good games, definitely. But for me, I'm going to counter your point a little bit. I think Domino will continue to get stronger as well, only because of the way she can move cards around. I think as more, you know, powerful cards do come out, she's still going to be able to interact with those in interesting ways. Let's say an ally is defeated, it goes to your discard pile. She can then swap down, use her alter ego ability to bring it back to hand. So as more, you know, good allies and good things like that come out, she's going to be able to keep playing with those a lot more than certain heroes. So we'll see how it goes. But I definitely think Cable is going to get stronger. Strongest of the wave, I'm going to say it's really difficult, you know? You know who's difficult to predict is Deadpool.
Yes, he's very difficult to predict. I can't tell if he's going to... Yeah, I can't tell what's going to happen with him. He could flame out. I feel like a lot of people are talking about Rush with him. He seems to be... That seems to be what he's kind of built for. A longer game doesn't seem to suit him. So I wonder how he plays in multiplayer. He could be, I don't know. His cards seem kind of crazy. He could be really, really good. So I'm curious to see him. I'm not super excited about it. I don't care about the character, the pool aspect. I have split opinions in the pool aspect too.
Yeah, the pool aspect is probably what I'm more looking forward to than Deadpool. But, you know, my partner loves Deadpool, so she's excited for that. But yeah, I do. I think a lot of his kit leans toward Rush. I think he's very obviously designed for, you know, a lot of very sudden damage. But I do think he will be good in multiplayer. I think in multiplayer, you will pivot out from, you know, destroying the villain very, very quickly. Unless you're in, like, you know, group Rush. If everyone's trying to Rush, you can still go crazy, I'm sure. I think in a regular multiplayer paced game, you're going to be kind of more of the, you know, burst output guy. If a big problem comes up, maybe you can find a lot of that damage you need very quickly to help deal with it. And I even think, you know, he can fought for, you know, in quite large chunks, which I think, you know, suits multiplayer quite well. So I think that's going to be an interesting angle for him.
Yeah, I mean, a Rush game with him and Star-Lord, forget about it. No villain stands a chance. I think Cable and Domino, for me, are by far the strongest campaign pairing we've gotten. I think for me it's not even close. There's always seems to be one that's kind of weaker. You know, I think Spider-Woman's great, Hawkeye is mid, and you know, Groot and Rocket, same thing. I feel like often you get one that's really good and one that's doesn't quite hit for me. I feel like both of these are really strong and they should only get stronger. I'm excited for this wave. I don't know what an X-Force is, but they're here and I'm excited to see what they can do. So I think X23 looks great. Angel looks really fun too. So I'm really excited for the whole wave actually. All right. Well, now it's time for us to transition to the card of the day. And the card of the day was selected by you. It's a little bit of a cheat, I will say, because it kind of comes with a second card and you can't really talk about one without talking about the other. Since you are the guest and you brought the card along, would you like to read the card before we start talking about it?
Yes. So today's card, as you know, anyone will have seen, is Phantom X. And I don't know if it's cheating. You know, he needs Eva. Hopefully you know some of the comic book lore, because I'm actually not too aware of it for him. But he looks very interesting. So he's a 4-cost ally. He has 1 4, 1 attack. And, you know, for those stats, kind of looking bleak, 3 health. He has his Psionic and X-Force traits. But he has a really interesting response that after Phantom X enters play, search your deck and discard pile for Eva and put it into play.
He is a energy resource and his flavor text says, Eva is more than a vehicle. She's my partner. She's my mutation. I'm going to go ahead and preempt everything you said about the backstory. I have no idea who Phantom X is. name is Charlie Cluster 7. I don't know what that is. I'm sure someone's going to send me a message and tell me I should have read, you know, X-Force Chapter 3, Volume 17, and that would have explained it all to me, but I don't know anything about it. Then let's talk about Eva. It says zero-cost support, which, as you said, comes into play after Phantomex comes into play, and it is traded as a vehicle. It says, if Phantomex is not in play, discard Eva. Action, exhaust Eva and choose one of the following. Remove one threat from a scheme, deal one damage to an enemy, heal one damage from Phantomex. So as you said, four cost for a 1-1 with three hit points is underwhelming, but it has this key component. So before we get into talking about the card, we always talk about the art. So I will introduce where the art came from, because this is from comics. Phantomex's art comes from Astonishing X-Men Volume 4, Number 1 from 2017. And Eva's art comes from a different comic, New X-Men Volume 1, Number 129 from 2002. What do you think about the art?
I actually quite like the art. You know, I don't know anything about this guy, but there's quite a lot going on here. You know, his outfit is quite detailed. Mm-hmm. And I quite like the pose, you know. I don't think he's a pose you see on a lot of heroes. You know, he's kind of got, you know, his hands out to the side. I don't know if that's some kind of use of his powers, but, you know, he looks quite, you know, arrogant to me. And, like, you know, he's kind of at ease despite there's clearly something going on.
He kind of looks like a villain. Like, it's kind of a villain pose, right, with the hands out. Like, it's got a kind of a mask. You can only see his eyes. I can't tell what's happening behind him. At first glance, it looked like he had some kind of Dr. Octopus arms, but now I just think it's something in the background. I can't exactly tell. It's like a gray and black. For anyone who can't see, it's a silver gray suit with some black detailing and then like an X-Men buckle, kind of like Deadpool's, a little belt with some pouches on it. And you can see his eyes. And then there's some stuff in the background that's unclear to me. And Eva, I don't even know what it is. What are we looking at here?
I have done the tiniest bit of reading now, and I believe, you know, you can see, you know, as you read out the flavor text from Phantomex, Eva is more than a vehicle. She's my partner. She's my mutation. I believe it is somehow linked, like, directly to him. I don't know if it came from him or was, like, I think it's related to his mind, but it is kind of manifest as a ship. I have no idea quite how accurate that is, and I probably, you know, butchered it entirely, so I apologize to a comic book fan. But that is what I'm, you know, gleaning here. I think it's a weird spaceship related to him, which is unusual to say the least.
I mean, it's traded as a vehicle, so we can take that as a clue. It's kind of like, it looks like a big circle, like a sphere, with some kind of a flat saucer kind of around the middle, and it looks like it's maybe sitting on some kind of a feet. There's like smoke around it, and there's two people standing in front of it. One of them is Phantomex, and one of them is someone with red hair. It could be anybody. So for anyone who's seen the movie WALL-E, this is not the same Eva. We're talking about a different Eva here. So, okay, that's the art. I think the art is fine. I can't exactly tell what it is, and I think I'm going to go on a limb here and say this is a more obscure character. If this is a mainline character of the X-Force, I apologize to comic readers. Please correct me, winninghandpodcast@gmail.com. I think it's a very... It's fine. Yeah, I'd say for art, it's solid for me. It doesn't blow me away, but it doesn't underwhelm either. The theme here... How do we feel about the theme?
The theme is really interesting. It's hard without knowing much about the character to get the theme from it. I will agree that in the background, I thought those were Dr. Octopus, you know, style arms originally as well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Eva to me is, it's a fishbowl merged with a frisbee.
it's a description.
Yeah, the theme. I mean, I think it suits the purpose in Phantomex. I definitely got some interesting personality. The way you described him as a villain, I thought was really interesting. And, you know, I can see the X on the belt. You know, I'm getting the X-Force theme come through.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's not blowing me away, but I do like it. In terms of theme, I'm not, you know, he's psionic. I'm not getting a great deal of that through. Maybe I'm missing something. So, yeah, I'm feeling fairly neutral on the theme.
I agree. I think the theme's a little weak here because we're talking about someone that I think most people probably won't know. And so they have to introduce this character right through this card, or two cards in this case. And I feel like I get most of the theme from the trait words, you know, psionic, X-Force, and vehicle, and the flavor text maybe. But it doesn't really tell a story to me to introduce me to who this character is. Now, I think that's a very difficult thing to do, right? Because if it's the Hulk, some bulging muscles and a broken car tells me everything I need to know, because I know who Hulk is. This is a little more difficult to explain a character no one knows in a tiny little half a card. But it doesn't blow me away. Now we get to the really important discussion of the power of this card. So I'm going to let you start. Tell me about the power of this card. How good is this?
That's a really interesting question for Phantom X, as he's obviously so unusual. I think he might be the first card we have, you know, definitely in the aspect pool at least, that is so, you know, linked to another card. So that definitely changes things up, because you can't really rate Phantom X without rating either. Phantom X on his own is easily probably, you know, one of the worst allies in the entire game.
Yes.
But Eva is really good. So I think where the power in Phantom X and Eva lie is that they're very versatile. Phantom X can attack or fort for one, but then you've got Eva, who can also remove one threat or deal one damage. Or the third option is to heal damage from Phantom X to keep him going. So I find these, when I've used them, very good. You know, I can pop a tough. If a minion's got one HP left, I can finish it off. Same for Scheme. If there's one threat left, I can, you know, easily deal with that. But having, you know, Phantom X who can maybe, you know, pop a tough, then Eva that can finish off a Scheme, I think they're extremely convenient and flexible.
One of the things I struggle with this card is Phantom X is a 1-1 with one consequential each. And Eva is essentially a 1-1 or can heal one from Phantom X. So why would you ever use Phantom X when you could just use Eva instead of you could use Phantom X and then take consequential and then use Eva to heal Phantom X, you could just use Eva instead.
I think this card is designed very much to work alongside other cards. So Phantom X is a very good platform for upgrades. He also works very well with the Uncanny X-Force support card, which actually means he won't take consequential damage if he's forwarding from a side scheme. One of the routes you can take with him is to, you know, slap a bunch of upgrades on him. Then he can forward a side scheme, won't take any consequential damage, ready him up by some means, and then he can perhaps attack. Will take the consequential, and Eva can keep him alive. So he's sort of a Voltron, you know, build-up ally that you can, you know, keep alive. You know, kind of there's some self-maintenance there with the healing. So there's one avenue you can take that I think adds a lot of worth to Phantom X.
I had not considered the Voltron Phantom X build, but it sounds similar to like a Yondu Voltron build, right? Or some of the newer ones that have come out with Cosmo recently, you know, with ability to look at the top of your card, especially with Domino. But the Voltron build makes sense to me. I can see that. The psionic, are there any cards that interact with psionic abilities on allies? I don't know if there are.
You can use team building exercise on, you know, Phoenix to bring him in for cheaper.
Or Cable.
Cable can get that, and we'll have a Psylocke in you know, not too long of a time. And he also enables you to use Cerebro because of the psionic trait, but it can only look for X-Men cards, I believe, you know, X-Men allies. So
you just have to control a psionic card, right? Not a psionic X-Men card. Is that how that works? Okay. And you can use the new power of the mind to help pay for Phantom X, which is helpful. And the great thing about Eva is that you search for it no matter where it is. So it's a wild resource, so you can just spend it if you see it early in the game. You don't have to make sure it stays in your discard pile, for example, like, because Phantom X searches for it no matter where it is. And Eva does not pull out Phantom X, so you'd have to spend Eva if you don't have Phantom X out yet. I think it has potential. The 4 cost is a lot to pay. You can get a discount on the psionic, but how often do you find yourself playing this card when you had it in your deck? Is this a must play for you? Every time it hits your hand, you're playing it? Or is it situational, or were you less enthused about it?
It's definitely situational for me because of the cost mostly. You know, if he was cheaper, you know, I mean, obviously he'd be stronger because of he's cheaper, but also more flexible to get into play. Because Marvel Champions asks you to deal with several things, you know, every, you know, time it's your turn. Because a villain is doing multiple things, it's going to attack you next turn. It's put some threat on. There's been an encounter card, maybe multiple. So you have a lot of things going on. So dedicating my whole turn, you know, mostly to playing an ally, it has to be a really good ally. So that definitely holds Phantom X back in my mind. But I do like to play him, because if I'm playing Phantom X, I'm basically committing to him taking up an ally slot to the rest of the game. That has been my style with him. So he's quite a long-term investment, kind of like an Avengers Mansion or something like that. I'm playing him not for the value he'll bring immediately, but, you know. So I would say if I get him earlier game, he's more valuable to me. And it is more in decks that, you know, really benefit from him. If I'm not, you know, really leaning into Uncanny X-Force, I don't know if I use Phantom X that much personally. I think that card really changes the game for him.
Now, remind me, is there a way to find X-Force allies in your deck?
Yes and no. If you use Call for Backup, which is the new player side scheme in leadership, that can search your deck or discard pile for an ally. So Cable, as we talked about earlier, is quite a good candidate for Phantom X. It comes in his precon for a reason, I think. But, you know, Cable can, as part of his setup ability, guarantee any side scheme he wants. So he can get Call for Backup in play. Then if he thwarts it, he can get Phantom X in play turn one. So that's definitely an option.
For free, too. He doesn't have to pay for Phantom X then, which is crucial. I mean, outside of the problem with building a Voltron deck with Phantom X, right, is that you have to find Phantom X, and then you have to find a bunch of upgrades. The best Voltron decks have a way to quickly find the ally you're looking for.
I have just remembered there is another ally called Caliban who will discard until you find another X-Factor, X-Force, or X-Men ally.
That's right.
If, say, Caliban and Phantom X were your only two X-Force allies in the deck, if you found Caliban first, you could then guarantee getting Phantom X. Although, as Caliban is a free cost ally, you would be hard pressed to play Caliban and then play Phantom X on that turn. So you might have to hold him, but it is possible.
The Call for Backup seems the most reliable route with Cable because you can guarantee you have it in your hand right away. And that would really make it free to put Phantom X in, and having it in turn one or very early in the game would really get the most value out of Phantom X and increase the odds you're going to find all those upgrades throughout the first deck pass, right? So off the top of my head, you know, when I think about really powerful Voltron decks, there was a deck with, I think, Star-Lord and Iron Man, as Iron Man is the ally, and you Call for Aid to go find him. Call for Aid is a great card for Voltron builds because you can just go find an Avenger. And, you know, we talked about Iron Man in one of the early episodes of the podcast because he's a great candidate for Voltron for other reasons. And I think Vivian and Vision, it's a great Voltron build because you can go find her. So outside of Cable, I just struggle with the idea of putting a four cost ally in that has another card that I'm going to use as a Voltron. It's difficult to reliably find it. And if you find it too late, you know, as you said, there's a lot going on, the investment may not be worth it if you find it later on.
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of that. One of the ways I like to run Voltron decks is I would actually have multiple targets to Voltron in the deck. So I might have Iron Man and, you know, for argument's sake, let's say Phantom X in, you know, this deck. And that will just increase my chances of potentially finding one early. So that is something I quite like to do. I think Ronin is another good ally for that. If you're playing someone like Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Black Cat, you know, if you have multiple targets that you want to set up, that can help you find one quick. So, you know, if Phantom X is, you know, one of your options, and I actually think the X-Force allies lend themselves quite well to Voltron builds. We have Deathlok, who's a really interesting character. He comes in and he, you know, makes you search for an upgrade to put on him. There is the Deadpool ally, which kind of heals himself with a consequence. But, you know, he can last forever as well. So, you know, you can kind of, you know, hedge your bets with different targets. So I think that's one of the strengths of this card. It's part of a series that you might want rather than just relying on him.
Now, not to go too big on the Voltron thing, because there's other ways to probably use Phantom X. But another issue I foresee here is the fact that many of those upgrades you put on characters, either some of them require you to be an Avenger, like Sky Cycle and Power Gloves. Some of them require you to be a Guardian. So this doesn't fulfill any of those. So there are still some, but your pool of upgrades has shrunk because it's only an X-Force. Sidearm, obviously, I think comes in Cable's kit. So that's a good target for Deathlok and potentially for Phantom X. But how else would you use this card if it's not a Voltron? Would you use it just without upgrades?
Yeah, I think he's, with Uncanny X-Force, usable without upgrades. And, you know, it is hard to, you know, the word Voltron, I think, is thrown around a bit casually, and perhaps I have done that. I don't think, you know, because of his traits, as you rightly mentioned, there are too many upgrades you can put onto him. But Uncanny X-Force kind of adds to his stats. And I think even just in an Uncanny X-Force deck, if you double his forwarding score to 2, and he stops taking consequential on side schemes, if you get him, you know, anytime around the mid to early game, he is probably going to earn his cost back, I would say, in my opinion. So that is definitely how I would probably, you know, I've mentioned it a couple of times, but Uncanny X-Force is actually a much stronger card than I thought it was going to be.
And for the listeners, can you tell us what Uncanny X-Force is?
Yes, it is, I believe it's a support card. And what it does is it gives your allies with the X-Force trait plus one to forwarding if they have the X-Force trait. And if they fought a side scheme, they do not take consequential damage.
Yeah, so crucially, it's a two-cost leadership support, like you said, and each of your characters has to have the X-Force trait. So you have to, it's kind of like Avengers Tower, I think, right? It's if everybody you control is the certain trait, then it gives you the bonus. So you do have to be careful there, and there aren't too many X-Force allies yet. So the pool, I found that card a bit hit or miss when I played the pre-con, because essentially all the allies in the pre-con are the only X-Force allies we got. So it's a small pool at this point. But I often found myself with Call for Backup getting Deathlok and guaranteeing then that I would pull Sidearm more than I was using Phantom X. Did you find that Phantom X was your favorite of the allies in that pre-con?
So for me, I've actually really liked Deadpool. I think with the two forwarding and two attack, it's very flexible. For any listeners who aren't aware, when Deadpool loses his last hit point from consequential damage, you put him back to 3 hit points, but you put an acceleration token on the main scheme, which in solo play is a little risky because of those low threat thresholds. But In general, if you just keep forwarding with Deadpool, because that acceleration token is adding one threat to the main scheme every turn, but he can take two off every turn, I think you stay in profit quite a lot, especially if you start to put upgrades on him. So I've quite liked Deadpool. Although I will say with Call for Backup, just for the cost, I do think, you know, Deathlok and Phantom X are perhaps better choices from that.
Mm-hmm. I found myself using Deadpool quite a bit, and I put First Aid in my deck to avoid the acceleration token as much as I could. You know, sometimes it was unavoidable and I wanted to get that to thwart anyway, but I tried to heal him, you know, two activations and then heal and try to get more activations before I was forced to put those accelerations. Because like you said, in solo and true solo, you really have very little wiggle room on that main scheme and you can't be careless with acceleration tokens, especially with a hero like Cable who wants to play a long game. I feel like Deadpool is actively playing against that with his acceleration tokens. So you have to kind of find the balance there. All right. So we talked about the power. How fun is Phantom X, and by extension Eva, to play when you're using it? Is it a card that you're excited to see in your hand? Do you really enjoy it hitting the table from another player if someone else is playing it? Are you excited when it hits the table generally? How fun is Phantom X?
I definitely think Phantom X actually scores higher on fun than power. I do really like the aspect of getting two cards into play. It is, you know, pretty satisfying to get that and suddenly have all these new pieces on the board to play with. So I quite enjoy that. I've spoken about the flexibility earlier and what that definitely contributes to power, you know, being able to target different things with each card. I also think there's some fun aspect to that as well. I'm not necessarily super excited if he's in my hand, but I'm not unexcited either. It's always, you know, maybe I could play him. You know, what's the situation? How much can I afford to do right now? But I'm never, you know, disappointed to see him. You know, unless I'm really searching for an answer to a problem, I'm drowning in minions where some damage, you know, immediate damage. But on the whole, pretty pleased to see Phantom X. And I think from a multiplayer perspective, I do like, you know, sort of what I referenced earlier as well, that he's very good at popping tufts or finishing off the last damage on a minion or, you know, on a scheme, which for me just rounds things out and is quite convenient. So I do like him.
I agree with you. I think he's more fun than powerful. But unlike another card you mentioned earlier, which was Avengers Mansion, right? It's an investment that is not going to pay off right now, but it will pay off later. I always find, especially in a multiplayer setting, Avengers Mansion pays off immediately because I play it. And then if I can't draw the card, someone else can draw the card. So it's an immediate payoff for the team. I find Phantom X, I'm not unexcited like you. I'm also not like, it's not one of those cards that when I see it as I'm drawing up, I'm like, yes, Phantom X is here. It's like, oh, okay, I have Phantom X. Depending on what else is in my hand, I may or may not play Phantom X. I don't know. Depending on where we are in the game as well, like what we need right now and how late in the game it is, because it may not pay off if I have to pay the full four cost. So I agree. I think it's kind of more middle for me. It can be fun. It's never not fun. But so then I think we need to move to final score time for Phantom X and by extension, Eva. We talked about the four categories that we normally do. And we always tell everyone when we're scoring a card, 5 is right in the middle. It's true neutral. So 5 is not a failing score. 5 out of 10 does not mean F. 5 out of 10 means it's right in the middle. You're kind of ambivalent about it. Knowing that, I will give you the final word. So I'll give my score first. Since you're the guest, I want you to have the last word on Phantom X. For me, Phantom X is a 6 out of 10. I find Phantom X to be a little better than mid. I think it's fun. It's a new kind of concept, a card that's linked to another card like this as an aspect card. So I think that's fun and it's unique and it's novel. If we see a ton of them coming out from now on, the score may drop for me. I find the art to be kind of mid-tier. I think the theme doesn't quite hit for me. The power waxes and wanes depending on what you're doing. So it's kind of in the middle, and I think 6 is somewhat generous, but that's where it lands for me.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair assessment. I agree with a lot of what you say there, which is maybe not the most interesting thing for the listeners, if I agree too much. I think in terms of the artwork, what I like is the character design, but there's probably a lot of artwork they could have chosen with this character design, which perhaps would be a little better. I have no idea, quite what is out there, especially if he's a more minor character. But the art is quite busy for me, and I think the fact we both mistook the things in the background for, Doc Ock arms, definitely weighs against it negatively. But I don't dislike the art. I do think he looks interesting. And like I say, I do find him more fun than powerful. And I would always rather a card was fun than powerful. So while I want to be different for the sake of being different, I actually think 6 is the perfect score for him. He's a good card, very playable. But, he's not something you're always, desperate to play. And in terms of fun, he is, fun. But he comes at a price because of that power. So you're not always going to get that fun out, or there's going to be a consequence. And although he is fun, one forwarding, one attack, same for Eva, they are small numbers. So there's none of that, big impact satisfaction coming from that. Although I do think there is fun turn to turn. But yeah, I think 6 overall for me as well.
Yeah, and we agree. So listeners, you heard it here first. Villain Theory thinks I'm a genius. He said it, not me. I want to pick up on one thing you said quickly. You said you would always rather a card be fun than powerful. And I think that's really insightful, actually, because I agree very much. Oftentimes, if a card is powerful and not fun, you'll find it in every single deck because it becomes one of those you have to include it. If you don't, you're really leaving something on the table or off the table, as it were. But you don't enjoy playing it. And I think there are some cards out there. They're not unfun, but there's some that are just staples that I see in so many decks, like Helicarrier. Avenger's Mansion was one of those early in the game, I think. I see that one a lot less now. Also, Quinn Carrier early in the game because everyone was an Avenger back then. That was in every deck. And Helicarrier is still in, I would say, a lot of decks I see Helicarrier in. And it's versatile in a multiplayer game. I get it. But it starts to feel like an auto-include. And I had a discussion not too long with someone on Discord. I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but we were talking about this kind of idea. And we were talking about how some decks start to feel very homogenous. Like, decks seem to have the same just good cards from an aspect in it, and they're not playing to the strengths of a hero. They're just putting all the good justice cards in a deck and playing him in justice. And I think the discussion I had was with Journeyman, who's another deck building guy. But the interesting part of the discussion was that, at some point you get all these cards that you feel like you have to include. And so you include them all, and pretty soon, nope, you're at 40 cards. And you have bravely been going over the 40 card threshold, which I respect, because I think people have been kind of proselytizing about the 40 card deck since the very beginning. And have made it so that that is the best way. And objectively, maybe it is most times. But I feel like very few decks risk to go over that. But I think a lot of these decks start to feel the same. It starts to feel like, Justice, the deck, rather than a Cable deck or a Miss Marvel deck. And instead of leaning into what's unique, you're just like, oh, this character would probably work great in Justice. So I'll put, all the good Justice cards in it. So I think less homogenous decks is better for the game overall. And I think that's where your point about fun over power is really important. And I always like when I sit at a table with people that I don't normally play with or people I'd play with, and I see a deck that I've not thought of before. or a concept that I hadn't considered. You know, recently I saw, well, it was a couple weeks ago now, but I saw someone post the deck with Spider-Woman and Cosmo, not taking any consequential damage and loading it up with all kinds of upgrades. And I thought that was really novel. That was a thing I hadn't seen until now. And the fact that 4 years in or whatever to this game, we're still seeing decks with cards that aren't new, but create new ways to play, I think that's really great. It speaks to the health of the game.
Yeah, those are some really good points. And I do actually really like Cosmo. I do like Cosmo because I like Star-Lord. And Star-Lord can actually swap the top card of his deck. So he kind of has a special synergy with Cosmo as well there. But I think that's a really good point. And I'm glad you went into it some more. I don't want to speak for him, but something I've seen from Journeyman lately in, you know, discussion and maybe in his decks is he likes to change up the resource cards. Most people have, you know, strength, genius, energy, and he's been advocating that maybe you don't need all those. Now, I'm kind of still on the train that I actually want them in almost all of my decks, but I think the freedom for creativity and making viable decks without them is there. And I think, you know, when you make decks for so long, you kind of, you know, you do need to freshen up the experience. And I think, whereas, you know, maybe perhaps he's, you know, perhaps, you know, using less energy, you know, resource cards, I am exploring with the player card limit, you know, why not go to 42 or 45 or 50 cards? And that's been really fun for me. And ever since I started playing the game, the, you know, the lore has been, you must have 40 cards. Do not go over these 40 cards, you know. But it's actually been really fun for me and I've enjoyed it. And there are definitely some downsides to it. I definitely only do it on certain heroes or with certain archetypes. I'm quite careful with it. At the same time, I think going to 41, 42, you know, you're barely going to notice, if at all. And some heroes do have advantages in some ways. The character I really like that I think most people don't is Adam Warlock. Adam wants to find an aspect card in every hand for his Battle Mage ability to trigger Mystic Senses. If you just have a handful of hero cards, you can't use it. So by diluting the deck more with more aspect cards, you increase your chances of finding one. And not only that, his events, which make you discard Karmic Blast and Cosmic Awareness, they also, you know, for every aspect card you find of a different type, they get a bonus as well. So again, the more you bring, the higher chance those have. So there's a little benefits that are there in the deck building already. You know, whether I'd say it's better overall for Adam to go over 40, I'm not 100% sure on that, but there are definitely some benefits that are fun. So I'd fully recommend people to explore. You know, conventions are there for a reason, and if you're just starting out, you know, perhaps don't go too crazy, but on the other hand, why not? And if you've played the game a long time, definitely, you know, push the boundaries, because no one else is going to do it for you.
Oftentimes, in a lot of aspects of life, like creativity can flourish when you're given some restrictions. So why not say, I'm going to only build 50 card decks for a while, or I'm going to leave out the three basic resource cards. I've also started to reassess the resource cards. And I still mostly use the double resource, energy, strength, and genius. But I've started to rethink a lot of the aspect resource cards. I used to use a lot more power of protection and power of aggression cards. I find myself almost never reaching for those anymore. I've kind of left those go by the wayside. So yeah, experiment, explore, try new things with the decks. And if everyone says you have to have 40 cards, then be crazy and do 41. Who cares? You're not going to notice, like you said. Before we go, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you and what they can expect from you very soon?
Yes. So if you're looking for anything I've done, perhaps the most obvious place is Marvel CDB. My name there is Villain Fury, as I'm sure you'll see it written somewhere, hopefully. And yeah, I've got quite a few decks and there's probably going to be a few more in the future. And also YouTube, also by the name of Villain Fury. So if you're interested in any deck building videos or anything else, please come by and have a look.
Awesome. I will put the link to your YouTube channel in the show notes so people can find that easily. I will also link the deck that you mentioned you were specifically proud of. I will link that down below. Please do check out Villain Theory's channel. I've watched not all of your videos yet, but I've watched a number of them. They're really good, really insightful. And I think you do fill that hole that the community felt when Tony Tails left. And so I really look forward to more of your content. So thanks for coming on today. That does it for today's show. Again, if you liked what you heard here today, please take 2 minutes and leave us a rating and review. That does help us move up the charts a lot and get the podcast into other people's hands. So thank you. And for me and Villain Theory, we'll sign off and say goodbye, and I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Boom. Too easy.